Welcome to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show, a real estate investment program. Listen and learn how to use real estate to build wealth and passive income streams for you and your family. We bring you experts every day to discuss and answer your questions on everything from single family homes all the way up to 600 plus unit apartment complexes. And now, the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome to the show. My name is Al Gordon, and as always, I'm working on your financial freedom. I promise you, I'm working on your financial freedom. And what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about how inflation is driving people into the commercial real estate markets. Yeah, it's a neat story. It's a really neat story. See, there was an article that was published just recently in wealthmanagement.com. Now, I'll be honest with you. I get a lot of my source material from wealthmanagement.com. So, you know, I'm going to give them a shameless plug and say maybe you ought to go check them out. They talk about a lot of things regarding real estate. So a lot of the things that they talk about, I'm not necessarily interested in because I'm not interested in all forms of commercial real estate. I'm only interested in the form of commercial real estate where people live for long periods of time. Yeah, that would be multifamily apartment communities. So when it comes to things like office or industrial or retail or hospitality, or I guess hospitality would include hotels too, right? Okay. Yeah, I don't invest in any of those things. And there are very specific reasons why I don't invest in those things. The first glaringly obvious reason, the first big reason I don't invest in all those other forms of commercial real estate, I'm not educated on how to do it correctly. I'll just be honest with you. I'm not educated on how to do those forms of commercial real estate correctly. So without a proper education, I'd be a fool to walk into that lane. I would be a huge fool. So I don't do it. I stay in the residential space. And one of the reasons that I stay in the residential space, now here's reason number two. You ready for it? People need a place to live. People absolutely need a place to live. And over the last year and a half, not only did they need a place to live, they needed a place to prepare their meals, they needed a place to raise their children, they needed a place to get to know their spouse better, they needed a place to, well, basically hang out while the government said, you can't go anywhere, you must stay where you're at. Yeah. So at the end of the day, one of the things that I have realized is that if I'm going to invest in an asset class, it should be an asset class that everybody needs. Yeah, doesn't that make sense? I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. Doesn't it make sense to you? Now think about retail. Retail's cool, man. I like going to the store and looking at stuff and comparing things, but I couldn't do that for 18 months. I wasn't allowed to do that for 18 months. As a matter of fact, for 18 months, the only stores I could look at were the ones that were online. You know, I couldn't pick up the merchandise. I couldn't like hold brand A next to brand B per se in my hands, and I could do it on some compare feature on a website, right? But I couldn't actually do anything with the items because I was limited. And as a result of being limited, well, I still bought stuff. I did still buy stuff, but the shopping experience wasn't necessarily there. So what's this got to do with retail? Okay. Well, think about it. If you're a business that relies on a retail storefront for your revenue streams, you were in a world of hurt in the last 18 months. It was difficult for you to open your doors. In many places, you were prohibited from opening your doors and selling your wares. So maybe you had to fall back to an online presence. Maybe that worked, maybe that didn't. Or think about it. Think about all the money. All the money you were contractually obligated to do, if you're in the retail business, all the money you were obligated to pay in the form of a lease. Most retail entities do not own their physical property. They rent the space from somebody else, from an investor per se. So if you're in the retail game, you still had obligations. You still had a lease that you had signed. You still had an obligation to pay that lease, even though you didn't have revenue coming in to support the payment of the lease. And ironically, you couldn't even open up your doors to operate your business, yet your lease was still there. And maybe you applied for a PPP loan. Maybe you did that. People did that. And the government shows up, maybe eventually, and they give you money. Okay, they gave you money. And with that money, they said, maybe you won't have to pay it back. Maybe we'll consider it a forgivable loan. Yeah, and that's kind of what the government did. The government basically went in the business of paying for everybody. Yeah, trust me, we can't sustain that in this country. We cannot sustain that in this country because all the revenue that the government gets comes from tax revenue. Yeah, well, majority of it, some of it comes from other places. Okay, I'll be fair. But the majority of the revenue the United States controls is tax money. And of course, the states get involved with that. And don't get me wrong, but many local municipalities, well, they get a play in that too, because that's how they operate their governments. So why am I way down in this rabbit hole talking about how governments earn money when I originally started off just by saying people are starting to realize that investing in commercial real estate, and more specifically, residential income producing real estate, the reason they're doing that is because they're finding out that just maybe, that commercial real estate is actually positioned to be a hedge against inflation. All right, as promised, that statistic from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. I know you have been sitting on the edge of your seat waiting for me to share this information with you. The Consumer Price Index rose 5.4% in September. And you're thinking, Al, you've already talked about that statistic. Yeah, but my point is, when I cited that statistic before, it didn't come from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. No, it's what I'm getting at here is the rest of government is finally catching on to the fact that inflation's out there and they can't play the smoke and mirrors game that they've been trying to play. Yeah, inflation is here. It is here. The price of goods and services are going up. It has to do with supply and demand. It has to do with the fact that not everybody in America has gotten back to work. There are businesses out there that are ready, willing, and able to get back in the manufacturing or the service providing modalities, but there are still people that are not willing to get off the couch and go to work. There's a huge labor shortage out there. It's not that we don't have enough people in this country to make that go away. It's just what's going on in the country. The country still is in this weird quasi tailspin, you know, with coronavirus. It's almost like the government doesn't want to let go of that because, man, with coronavirus, they've got so much control over us, right? Yeah. Well, you know, I'll be honest with you, in Texas, the government doesn't have much control over me. The only time I actually have to wear a mask. Now get this, in the state of Texas, the only time I am mandated to wear a mask is when I go onto a military base. Yeah, a federal installation. And be honest with you, I don't even have to put it on when I go onto the base. They've actually relaxed that rule. But when I go to the medical center on the base, they've got this big sign out there that says, you must mask up. And if you walk in without a mask on, oh my goodness, man, it's like people are falling all over each other to get you a mask because they know you're contagious. Okay. I'm not trying to make light of people that are concerned about coronavirus. That's not my point. My point is the standards are all out of whack. They're all out of whack. The federal government says you have to do one thing. The state of Texas says you have to do another thing. I'm an American, and to be honest with you, I'm okay with choosing what's right for me. I don't need big government telling me how to live my life as an American. As a matter of fact, I spent 27 years in the United States Army protecting those freedoms. And now that I'm not in the Army, I kind of expect to enjoy those freedoms. Because when you're in the Army, believe it or not, it's almost like being in prison. Yeah. Now, I'm not comparing the Army to prison, but I am comparing the institutionalization and the fact that control over what you do and how you do it and where you can go and where you can't go and who's got authority over you, they're not too different. They're really not too different. So, having said all of that, I enjoy my freedom. I enjoy the freedom to put a mask on if I choose to do so. Now, myself, I choose not to wear a mask. And the reason I choose not to wear a mask is because I just don't think they're effective. I don't think they're effective at all. As a matter of fact, I've read the labels on the masks that they sell us that are considered, okay, if you wear this mask, you're in compliance with what the municipality wants you to do. And when I read on the bottom of the mask in the small print, it says this mask will not prevent the transmission of communicable diseases. Okay, well, coronavirus is a communicable disease. So if this mask isn't going to stop it, why am I wearing it? What's the point? Am I wearing it so that somebody else might feel good about it? Well, as far as I'm concerned, if they feel good about me wearing a mask that won't protect them because if I cough up coronavirus and it goes through the mask, it's still going to get on them. Why am I giving them a false sense of security? Yeah, well, the reason I'm telling you all this stuff is because the government, in my opinion, is completely out of touch with what's going on in America. I really think so. I mean, look at what's going on in the news. Okay, I'll admit, I've actually started watching the news again. I know I took a long hiatus, but just recently I've started watching the news again. And I'll tell you what, I think this country is in okay shape, but we're just doing some really dumb stuff in this country. And the point I want to make is that the government has known for a while that inflation is affecting our economy. They've known this for a while. There are smart people that work for the government. I know this for a fact because I've actually met some of them. And as a result of that, I also know that the smart people understand what's going on. The problem is the smart people tend to get diffused by the political people that want to paint a picture of whatever it is they want you to see. You know, nothing behind the mirror here, right? Don't look for that little guy behind the curtain. Nope, he's not there. Okay. Inflation. It's here. There's no getting around it. There's no crazy economic terms that I could talk about to tell you that inflation is transitory. Yeah, no, it's not transitory. It's here. It's here. And the article that I cited in the last segment, which, by the way, I have to give credit to Beth Mattson Teague because I really like her work. I really do like her work. She actually spent some time to figure out information and present information that is relevant to somebody like me who is an investor. So the article she wrote basically determines that the Bureau of Labor Statistics, after looking at the Consumer Price Index, they determined that the consumer price index rose 5.4% in September. That is the fifth straight month in which the inflation rate was 5% or greater. Yeah, you heard me correctly. 5% or greater. Okay, 5% alone necessarily, well, I mean, it's a bump, right? It's a bump. I mean, think about it. What's 5%? If you go out to dinner and you got a $100 bill, all right, that's what your bill is, and you're going to tip the person, I mean, 5%, that'd be for like terrible service, right? You're probably going to get 15, maybe 20%, right? So maybe you're going to add like 15 or 20 bucks to that bill because you had great service. Well, this inflation rate is kind of like saying 5 months ago, you would add 5% to the bill, and then 4 months ago, you'd add 10%, and then 3 months ago, you'd add 15%, 2 months ago, you'd add 20%, and now you're adding 25%, and that all happened in a period of about 5 months. Yeah. So if you think about it, if prices went up 5% month over month over month, oh, that means things are expensive, right? Okay, so how does commercial real estate work with all this? I'll tell you when we come back. Stick around.
The rich get richer and the poor get poorer, not because that's the way it's set up, but because of the knowledge.
When put into action, knowledge is power. At Lifestyles Unlimited, we empower you to live the lifestyle of your dreams through passive real estate income. For over 30 years, our successful members have shared their knowledge through case studies, classes, and mentoring. Tap into that knowledge. Attend a free workshop online. Register now at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Warning. Listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show will change your life. We will teach you how to create wealth and passive income so you can be financially free. And now, back to your host.
Welcome back to the show. Do you recall a time in the past when you've listened to this show and I told you that real estate is the only asset class out there that tends to not only keep up with inflation, but stay ahead of inflation? I know you've heard me tell you that on the show many times before, and I'm going to tell it to you again today. Real estate is the only asset class that I'm aware of that actually keeps up with, if not does better than what inflation does. So how's that work? How do you make that work? How do you do that? I mean, holy heck, how can you make real estate do better than inflation? So what you're telling me is if inflation went up 5% in 1 month, and then it went up 5% in another month, and it went up 5% in another month, and so it's like maybe up 25% if that's really how it works. That's not quite how it works, but it gives you a general idea that something that was worth $1,000 5 months ago might now be worth $1,250. Yeah. I mean, think about it. If you look at a 5% bump on $1,000, what does that do for you? It takes you, what, $1,050? And then a 5% bump on that takes you technically a little bit more above $50. And then a 5% bump. See where I'm going? You see how the math works? So you think about it. If you've got a real estate unit, let's just say it's a two-bedroom, two-bath apartment unit within a 100-unit apartment community. And let's say when you lease that property out 9 months ago, you were getting $1,000 a month for rent. That was the rent. That's the agreed upon rent. That's the rent that you determined was fair market value. And that's what you offered your property for. And your resident came along. They inspected the property and they said, this has good value for $1,000. I've looked at a lot of other properties that don't look nearly as nice that are asking the same amount of money. I'm going to lease with you if you're okay with that. And of course, my answer is, I'd love to have you, but first, before we do, we need to pass a background check to include credit and criminal. I just want to make sure I understand who I'm getting into business with, and I've got some particular business rules that you need to be aware of, and if you're okay with those business rules and all the background stuff comes back fine, I'm going to lease that property to you. And what happens at that point is we enter into a contract. It's called a lease, and that lease outlines everything between the resident and myself with regards to what my responsibilities are and what their responsibilities are. And I take all of that very seriously. I do, because it is a contractual obligation between the two parties. Now, let's say 9 months has gone by and your resident notified you and said, "Hey, Al, I really like the apartment. I really like the community, but it looks like maybe I've got a opportunity for an advancement with my company, and I think I'm going to take it. But what it's going to mean is I'm going to have to move from where we are now to another state. So I just wanted to let you know that I will stay in the apartment. I will pay the lease like I'm supposed to every month up until the last month. And at the end of the last month, I'm going to move on." And my response to that person is, "Dude, that's cool. That's really cool. I'm glad you're a success at what you're doing. I'm glad they see the potential in you. I'm glad you're getting a better job. I'm sad to see you go. I really am. But I'm happy for you." Yeah, and I would be happy for somebody like that. And so what does it do for me? What does it do for me? Okay, well, let's think about this for a minute. If that property was worth $1,000 a month, if that particular unit was worth $1,000 a month 9 months ago, and I knew that this resident's getting ready to move out in the next couple of months, I need to figure out what that property could be worth in today's market. Yeah, I have to figure that out. And if I follow what inflation is doing, inflation is kind of giving me the indication that that property should rent for $1,250 a month now. Yeah, based on what I just told you, $1,250 a month as opposed to $1,000 a month. Now, I'm not going to use strictly inflation metrics to determine what my property is worth. If you're so worried about staying ahead of inflation, then that tells me that you're invested in stuff that gets hammered by inflation. See, in the real estate world, because our rents naturally tend to follow the direction of the market, rents tend to go up. And if inflation is affecting everything, that also means that inflation will affect our properties. But here's the other thing I want you to keep in mind. When I bought that property, remember I said, let's call it a 100-unit apartment community, right? So let's say I bought this thing a couple years ago, and I went through and I fixed everything up. I made it a very nice property in the marketplace. And when I got those $1,000 a month rents, let's say I was only getting maybe $750 when I took the property over, because that's all that property could command based on its amenities, based on a lot of factors. But because I had a very good business plan and I understood that this property could be repositioned within the marketplace, and as a result of that repositioning, I could command rents of $1,000 a month. And that's where I was able to get my price point to. I was able to get it to $1,000 a month price point. Now, let's say because of inflationary pressures, rents have gone up. So maybe my assumption that unit could rent for $1,250. Well, maybe that's kind of realistic based on what inflation is doing. But the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to take a look at my competition. Yeah. I'm going to actually take a look at what the market is doing. I'm going to take a look at what similar properties are commanding for rents in the marketplace. Now, I should probably know some of this demographic data because I'm paying attention. And what I'm going to find out is that, yeah, actually, two-bedroom, two-bath properties in today's market in a particular asset class can rent easily for $1,250. Not too bad, is it? Now, keep in mind, as we increase the rents on our properties, that is going to allow us to affect something called net operating income. Net operating income is one of the two factors that you need to know in order to determine valuation for multifamily properties or any commercial real estate for that matter. Because costs are also going up. Yeah, there are things that I have to purchase in the marketplaces that I have to put into play in my apartment buildings, and those costs are being affected by inflation. Those costs are going up. So as a result of that, my expenses are also going up. So I'm managing that. I'm monitoring that and making sure I'm not being damaged by excessive increases on my expenses. Did you figure out that one thing that does not get affected by inflation? Yeah, you're right. It's the loan. It's the debt service that I put on that apartment community. You see, one of the things that I will do is I will use the appropriate amount of leverage. In other words, the appropriate size of loan to help me buy this apartment community. And the reason I do that, well, I'll be honest with you, there's a lot of reasons why I do that. The first reason is I don't have to come up with all the money. If I have a lender out there that's willing to loan me 60, 70, possibly 80% loan to value on an apartment community, that's pretty good for me. That means I only need to come up with 20, 30, maybe 40% of the money necessary to acquire it. And here's the other neat thing about these loans. Once you lock these loans in and you didn't play around with adjustable rate mortgages, you just went with a fixed amount, that loan payment every month that it's due is constant. Yeah, you heard me correctly. It's constant. It is not affected by inflation. There is no inflation clause in your mortgage. So if your mortgage requires you to, let's say, pay X amount of dollars every month, you're going to pay X amount of dollars every month. And every month that you make that payment, a portion of that payment is going towards principal reduction. So in other words, the amount of money that you actually owe on that loan is less every month. Which inversely creates equity for you in the property, because if you don't owe any money on the property, you must have equity in its place. That's how the financial relationship works. The other neat thing is this. Let's say you increased your income streams and maybe inflation helped you do it. Maybe inflation is what caused your rents to go from, say, that $1,000 price point to maybe $1,250. And maybe your overall expenses, maybe those have risen too. Because, I mean, you're going to buy goods or services specifically to support the operation of that property. And maybe those expenses have risen too. But that mortgage price that you pay every month, it doesn't go up. It stays the same. So the further you get away from the day that you signed that note is actually not increasing, it's decreasing. And there's no inflation clause. Technically, that means the cost of the money kind of gets a little cheaper. Trust me, there's somebody out there that can do the mental gymnastics of math that can prove that statement that I just made. I am not capable of doing it, nor am I interested in doing it. But I do know this. If I've got a property that I'm paying, say, 3% interest on, and 5 years from now, I still have that note and I still have that property and my rents have gone up. Maybe my expenses have gone up, but so is my cash flow. Because my cash flow is not being affected by increases in the principal and interest payments on that note. Now, taxes and insurance, yeah, they have a tendency to go up also. Those are two of the major expenses you really need to take a look at and consider. But my experience, as well as the experience of a lot of Lifestyles Unlimited members that I've talked to about this particular subject, is that the income streams tend to stay ahead of the expense streams. So not only are you getting a bigger buffer on your income, your equity is going up in this property, and that note payment that you make every month, it never goes up. It stays constant. Oh, and here's the other thing. Man, I got to share this with you, because I don't know if I've told you this or not. Here's the other neat thing about that note. See, the lender bought into the deal at the time you purchased the property. And all the lender is interested in is whatever interest the lender will earn over the life of the loan. And maybe what they did is maybe they had you pay some prepayment interest. Okay, prepaid interest. Yeah, it's called points to maybe buy down the interest rate. Or maybe as part of the loan that you took out, maybe you did something like a 3-2-1. In other words, it's a penalty buy down. And the reason the lender puts that in there is they don't want you selling the property within the first 3 years, because that will actually affect the amount of money that they're supposed to make on the deal. So they put these little things in there. All right, just things you need to be aware of. But here's the most beautiful thing about what the lender does not do. The lender does not, and I'm going to say this again, does not participate in the equity growth that you create on that property. You heard me correctly. They're in it for whatever they agree to with regards to the interest that they will earn over the life that that loan is in existence. That's how they make their money. And I'm okay with them making their money that way. I'll be honest with you. If they didn't make money that way, they wouldn't be able to provide that money to me, and it would be so much harder for me to buy commercial real estate. Now think of this. Let's say you've got 20% equity in a multifamily property. Let's say it's just 20%. Let's say you've got a loan that's 80% of the value. So you've got debt at 80%. You've got equity at 20%. But you own 100% of the value increases you create on this property. Yeah, that loan amount, unless you sign something really weird or that you shouldn't have signed, that thing stays as it is. It does not participate in the equity gains that you create in that property. So in other words, let's say you take that property and let's say you increase the equity of the property by $1 million. There's an extra $1 million of value in this property now because you've done the things to increase the value. What about the lender? Doesn't the lender get some of that $1 million? And the short answer is no. No, they don't. They get zero of that. But I will tell you this, that lender, when they find out that $1 million of extra equity is there, you know what they're doing? Well, they're doing something called the happy dance. Yeah, you know what the happy dance is. You saw that goofy movie. Yeah, I'm not even going to bring up the name of the movie, because if I do, that's all you're going to think about for the rest of the show, and I don't want to do that to you. My point is this. The lender is very happy that you increase the equity position. And here's why. Because now there is an extra $1 million of equity in that property, which protects them because they're in a first lien position. In other words, if you totally messed everything up and you just drove that property into the ground and the lender had to foreclose on you, there would be at least an extra $1 million of equity sitting there that would allow them to hopefully negotiate their way out of the deal, step away from the deal, cover whatever principal they have in the deal, and then they walk away and they don't get burned. That's kind of the way they look at it. But I look at it like this. Dude, you just made $1 million. Yeah, you don't know it yet. I mean, it's not in your hand. But when we look at the financials and we see what you have done by increasing the income streams, controlling the expenses. Now, you can't maintain 100% control on your expenses. So if toilet paper costs $1 a roll today and tomorrow it costs $2 a roll, all right, you might be able to find it for $1.50. You're going to look really hard. But at the end of the day, you're probably going to wind up paying the $2. You're still controlling your expenses. You're making sure the expenses don't rise faster than the income streams. Yes, this is a beautiful thing. And then when you do the inverse math, when you take a look at the net operating income, And you divide that by the prevailing cap rate that provides you the number you need from the financial world. When you determine that that value has gone up, now you've got a great opportunity. You can do a cash out refinance on that property, pull your money back out. Once you have your $1 million plus whatever else you were able to take out of that property out of there, you can go out and buy another property. In the meanwhile, you would have potentially nothing invested in the property you just refinanced. Yeah, so your rates of return become infinite. And now you've got the money to go out and buy a second asset. You get to do it all over again. This is the beauty of multifamily real estate. And I will tell you this, inflation is going to do what inflation's going to do. You can't control it. I can't control it. But the one asset class that at least stays ahead of it, it's real estate, man. I am here to tell you, it's real estate. And most specifically, of the commercial real estate out there, it is the residential component. You want to find out how to do this? It's pretty easy. Go to lifestylesunlimitedworkshops.com. Get signed up and let's get you going.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the host, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.